Hello, hello. This is Alex Burkett, and you are listening to the Long Game Podcast. In this episode, I'm chatting with Emily Marsh. Emily is the content manager and podcast producer at Iconosquare, a leading analytics and social media management suite for Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and TikTok. In this conversation, we are going to talk about managing a content team that spans two countries and the challenges involved with that, why you should consider TikTok as a marketer without getting sucked into the addictive algorithm yourself, the trade-offs you make when you position your content for advanced audiences, and much, much more. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Emily Marsh. So to build the scaffolding of the conversation, it's kind of a boring question to start with, but what do you specifically work on at Iconosquare? Am I pronouncing that right? Iconosquare?
Yeah, Iconosquare. Mm-hmm. I'm in charge of content. I have had a few titles over the years. I started 6 years ago working here, so I'm one of the older members of the team now. And I'm in charge of content. So that's anything from the blog to the podcast to overseeing also social media posts, like co-marketing collaborations, which we do with other companies. I dabble in influencer partnerships as well. We're a small marketing team, and I'd say that we all sort of play a role in each of the different aspects of marketing.
What does influencer partnerships look like for you?
So we're looking at the moment, a big part of our strategy is to build awareness, especially in Europe, because although we are based in France and an office in Berlin, and so we're very European, and despite that, over 50% of our custom comes from the US and elsewhere in the world, and we would actually like to really build brand awareness in Europe. And specifically in France, the French love a French built product. So that's really on the cards for us at the moment. And with that, we have Tanya, who is in the marketing team as well, who is in charge of partnerships, and she's been starting up some really cool collaborations with some French influencers, be it print, be it on social media, TikTok, Instagram. So just trying to get the word out there, and they do, what do they do? They'll do like demos of our product. They'll talk to their community. We'll give them like promo codes and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just a really nice relationship that we have with these guys who have great communities in the sector we're after.
So is this like you go after people on YouTube who talk about social media? You go after podcasters, like anybody who has sort of an audience, and you try to get in front of them with some sort of a, you know, a win-win incentive?
Yeah, exactly. I can also think of some French like publications, like online newspapers and stuff like that, which are really like very well appreciated by the French marketing community. So we have things like Le Blog du Modérateur, which probably won't mean anything to you, but it's a it's a really well-known marketing and tech press, online press source. So yeah, we're in collab with them at the moment, and it's great. So yeah, things like that.
That's cool. Let me rewind and ask about that split between like the international marketing priorities. When I worked at CXL, I noticed we would partner with a lot of A/B testing tools, and you've got a couple of your own kind of French platforms, right? Like A/B Tasty was one that started over there, and then there was Chameleon. And I think A/B Tasty has since expanded internationally very well. But something I noticed was that in France, you mentioned this actually, in France and in Germany, there was always like a dedicated platform to like whatever, you know, tool they needed. Like there's something about like you want to buy, like French people want to buy a French product. Has that prevented you in any way from... or has that held any challenges to international expansion? Like you mentioned, you know, 50% of your customers being in the US. Like, how do you split those two in terms of your content marketing priorities?
Okay, so when Iconosquare first began, we were only targeting the US. So we didn't penalize ourselves in terms of international expansion, because that's literally all that we were going after originally. Mm. So we were very much less well known in France than we are today, although we would still like to build on that and be more well known across Europe and especially in France. In terms of content, 95% of our content is in English. And that's also another, it can put the brakes on for France because a lot of, I'd say most French people would prefer to read their content and listen to their content in their mother tongue, which is French. So that's something that we do have a French blog where mainly what we have is translated articles from our English blog, which is our main one. And apart from that, yeah, a lot of our content, most of our content, I should say, is targeted directly to English speakers.
That makes sense. So you mentioned there's two offices that you work across, or how many offices? Where's everyone located?
Yeah, two offices. Headquarters is here in Limoges, which is central France. It's where Iconna Square was born. In 2018, we opened an office in Berlin, where we have a small part of the team. And what's great is actually colleagues, employees of Iconna Square can sort of move between the two offices. And we had like a couple of people who started out here and ended up moving to Berlin, continuing to work for Iconna Square full time from the office over there. And we also have remote policies, like we have some of our colleagues who work from the south of France or elsewhere as well. So we're kind of branching out internationally, but we do have two fixed offices.
Working from the south of France doesn't sound like too bad of a deal.
Exactly. Everyone's a bit jealous.
I would imagine. So what have the challenges been with regards to like running a marketing and content team across two locales?
So at the moment we have Florian, who's in charge of acquisition, and Marie, who is our social media manager. And those are the only two people we have in Berlin, working out of the Berlin office on the marketing team. And the rest of the marketing team is here in Limoges. It's only four more people, like there's six of us. Challenges are, well, mainly I would say it's always nicer to have a meeting in person than it is over a video call. Although obviously with COVID, thank goodness, we have actually got a lot better at it, and Zoom has come to the rescue a lot of times over the past couple of years. Apart from that, no, not really too many challenges. We make it work. We go and see them. They come and see us. We have like meetups and stuff, and company-wide meetups as well. So really for the marketing team, I wouldn't say that there are that many challenges to it, really. It's been interesting getting used to it, because originally we had our entire marketing team here on site in Limoges, but it was a learning curve, but we've gotten used to it. It's mainly the communication side of things which is a bit of a change for us. But yeah.
Do you think it's actually been easier for content teams to go to this asynchronous remote model, given that it seems like dispositionally, like somebody who works in content actually really loves that time to carve out for themselves, you know, for deep work, and meetings can tend to be a burden. I mean, obviously there's value in doing so, but like I could see a content person being like, yes, I've got like 8 hours where I can choose when I work and like when I meet, and I don't have like these constant interruptions. Whereas maybe like a product marketer is like so used to, you know, setting up syncs on people's calendars that maybe it's more challenging for a team like that. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's strange that you should take that example of the product team, because I think that I can relate with the product team here. They're very close-knit and like to be present in the office as much as possible, whereas we adapted really well when we were full remote for a time there during COVID. We were all fully remote, and I don't think that within the marketing team there were any particular problems with that. We were all kind of quite comfortable, just, thinking out our own day, organizing our own time, and yeah, we definitely made it work. There was no trouble there. We're not a full remote company. We're not planning on going full remote either. We hold the office quite close to our hearts. We've got a really lovely space here, and in Berlin they have a lovely space as well. So like the human contact is such an important part of our company. Like we're quite a close-knit team. There's not that many of us. It's about 50, I think, at the moment. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and everyone knows each other. We're all part of each other's family, really. So, yeah, having said that, as I say, the full remote wasn't a problem for most of the team.
That's amazing. Yeah, you get like twice the content production and you're like, what happened? Oh, we let them work the way they wanted to this whole time.
Exactly.
So I'm going to ask you a bit of a high level and potentially grandiose question, but you can take this as you will. What is the mission for content marketing? What's the vision for content marketing at Ikano Square? Like, how do you approach it from a very top level?
We have a new strategy in place, which we finished concocting a few months ago, which is that we want to target experienced social media marketers with our content. The new blog and the new podcast, which came out a few months ago, the podcast just over a year ago, are literally called ESM Squared, which stands for Experienced Social Media Marketers. So all of our content is targeted to these professionals. So we're not looking for newbies. We're not looking for like junior social media marketers. We're looking to convert with our content the experienced social media marketers. The people that we're really interested in are people working for big agencies, big companies, and also really experienced freelance social media marketers, because those are the guys who do a lot of the legwork for the big companies out there also. So I'd say that is our vision, definitely. We base most of our blog content on, we use Ahrefs and go on looking for SEO and we make sure that we're targeting the right keywords. We have content meetings where we put ourselves into the mindset of an experienced social media marketer. What kind of content is he looking for? What kind of, he or she, looking for? How do they want to have their content? Do they want to read it? Do they want to listen to it? Do they want to watch it? That's kind of how we go about, thinking out our content.
It sounds like that shift was relatively new to go all in on the experienced social media marketer. What led to that decision? Because I'm sure there's trade-offs, right? Like you're chopping off like a very large segment of the market, which is more of the beginner crowd.
Yeah. Our most read article on the old blog was the top 10 Instagram filters, which is great, because it brings a lot of traffic. But
didn't convert though, did it?
That's it. It's our content was great. People love reading it. We had hundreds of thousands of visits to our blog every month. We were like really, really good. But that content wasn't converting into custom, and we are now a growth team. We've really like transitioned from content marketing to growth, and we work a lot more with the sales and the customer support team. We're really looking to up our marketing into something much more professional and which converts a lot better. So that was the choice that was made, and we know that the trade-off is that we will be producing less sort of attractive looking content for the untrained eye, and that we will be getting less traffic, but we want that traffic. Like, we know that traffic will be much more qualified and much more ready to buy. So that is our strategy now.
I love that. That resonates with me. It's a hard strategic trade-off though. I went through this when I was at CXL. Like, we were writing for advanced, data-driven marketers and A/B testing people. So in fact, if we wrote like a beginner level article, people would give us backlash. Like, it wasn't even neutral. It was actually a negative thing. And then with our content agency, one of our missions is to kind of elevate the content marketing universe, to have discussions that go above the basic level. But, if we had chosen that route that, like Neil Patel had taken, there's just a larger market there. But when we looked at our analytics, it was similar, right? Those keywords are competitive. So like if you write, what is content marketing or what is social media, those types of things rarely convert in the near term. And it's like many years, maybe like of a brand awareness play. And then you got a question. It's like, is this the right person anyway? Like, is this the person I should be attracting? But I do think, I don't know if you've experienced this, but it feels like there's less volume in the advanced content space, less people kind of looking for that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our blog is quite new at the moment, so I won't talk about figures at the moment, because I'm sure that there's still more things to come in the future. However, yeah, I mean, we know that we're going to take a big hit in terms of traffic. And we're also producing less, you know, we're producing much more top level and quality content. So we know that the traffic is going to falter in that respect. But it was a risk that we're really willing to take, and it was something that we were ready to do. It's not like we're getting rid of the other content, you know, we still have it on that separate blog. But this new blog, ESM Squared, is really dedicated to professionals. And I know, like, for me, I would call myself a social media professional, not that I actually do social media for my company anymore like I used to, but working like for Icona Square, obviously social media analytics, we're in the space, we know what's what, and I would immediately unsubscribe from a newsletter that's sending me like basic tips, you know. And I feel like if I feel that way, and if Marie, our social media manager, feels that way, then why are we continuing to produce content which we know is eventually like going to turn the good customers away, you know? So I think we need to respect them as well in that sense, and give them the content that is actually going to help them.
I love that. Even just if you empathize, like, and think like you did with your situation and my situation, like, you know, everybody goes through that phase where they're reading like the beginner stuff. They go to HubSpot's blog, you know, read the basics, get there. And then there comes a point in your marketing career where you lift your head up and you're like, wait, what's next? You know, and then you find this dearth. There's just no content for that intermediate to advanced level. So there's definitely a demand for that stuff. Have you, it sounds like SEO is a pretty strong priority in terms of how you pick blog posts in the past.
Yeah, we did a big big brainstorming session where we basically came up with a long list of keywords which we wanted to target after research. Most of our content is outsourced. We have some amazing freelancers who are like SEO professionals. They know what they're doing and they produce like the best content off of a list with internal linking. Like we've got it all planned out for them. So all they have to do is create the piece and make sure that the internal linking is correct and that the SEO checks out. So yeah, SEO, it was the main thing originally. And now as the content develops and we have more and more pieces on the blog, we're able to identify other areas which would require another blog post, you know, to be also linked to the original ones. So because the thing is that the SEO, we know the kind of keywords we want to go for because we've worked out our personas and we know who we're targeting. And at the same time, we know that we're not going to find very popular SEO keywords because these are not the keywords which have a lot of content on them. So the inspiration comes from us, and also we help ourselves out with Ahrefs.
Yeah, that's where I was going is once you take off beginner content from the table, there's still keywords available, but they're not as there's not as many. So I was gonna, you know, ask if you've shifted a little bit of the thinking around how you pick topics, and obviously how you write the content is gonna differ. But if this is, I don't know if you thematically agree with this difference, but there's kind of like in my mind, there's SEO driven content. And then there's thought leadership or like kind of brand content where you're like putting forth opinions and original research and just like net new stuff that there may not be search volume for yet. There might be in the future, but you're kind of getting in front of that. So is that a shift that you've consciously taken towards maybe like writing a little bit more? Hey, this is stuff that we've learned. Hey, this is stuff that experts are talking about. This is stuff that people are talking about in Slack groups or whatever, versus just taking kind of a prioritized list of traffic, search volume keywords.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that we are definitely moving more and more towards, especially since being Icona Square, we have access to a lot of data. We have industry benchmarks. We have all sorts of hashtag data and stuff like that, which we can provide content which makes sense and is backed up by data, and we can do all of that internally. So that would be the first thing that I would say we're moving towards. And then, yeah, like Slack groups and talking about like the buzz in the space. That's definitely a good idea. That's not something that I had thought of before, but thanks.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. People like just tell you, they pour their hearts out with the problems they're facing, and they're often these problems that haven't been written about in blog posts. That's one of the ways we used to do it when I was at CXL. We actually had our own Facebook group, so that was really nice as like a, you know, insight pool of what people are actually struggling with.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's some. I'll tell you, Facebook group has been on our list for like the best part of the past 2 years. We haven't got around to launching one yet, but it would be really great because we know that just within the Iconosquare community, like the users of Iconosquare, they have so many like really relevant questions which come up sometimes through customer support, but we don't get the proper feed of all of them. So if we gave them that space, I'm sure that that would also be really beneficial to content creation. Yeah.
Well, how does your podcast work and how does that fit in? Are you interviewing experts or what's the general play with the podcast?
So the podcast, like the blog, is called ESM Squared, the podcast for experienced social media marketers. And I interview mainly Iconosquare users. So these are the brands and agencies who use Iconosquare and who are getting great benefit out of it and use all the different features. It's not in... I don't do the podcast. I don't interview these people with the aim to promote Iconosquare as a product. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to tell the stories behind the scenes of their social media strategy. I want to know how many people are in their team, how they go about creating their strategy, how many times a week they post and why, what a good experience is for them on social media, if there's a memorable moment that sticks out for them, what a typical day looks like. And all of that is to inspire others like them. And obviously, at the end of the road, the aim is to bring more interest in Iconosquare. But I've had a lot of really positive feedback from that because people seem to have the same problems. A lot of them have the same worry points and they can learn from each other. And I'm just bringing them the platform to do that, you know?
I'm curious, is there anything that rises to mind when you think about like your podcast interviews, anything you've learned from your guests?
Oh, I've learned so much. I should have thought of something in advance because I'm not going to think of anything now.
I know that's a tough one on the spot. So it's totally fine if you know, nothing rises right away.
I remember something actually, something amazing, which I learned from the CEO of a company called Mercy Handy. I'm not sure if you know, they do like the little hand gels and they do all sorts of cosmetics now. It's all vegan and cruelty free. And I interviewed the CEO of that company and he opened my eyes to something I thought was amazing. I had a eureka moment when I was listening to him speak. And I now recommend it as well, which is if you want to bring sales through Instagram, you post like a contest and then the very next day post a promotional offer for your e-commerce website. And with all of the traffic that you would have brought from the contest, the algorithm is much more likely to boost that next post to the top of those users' feeds, meaning that you'll get a hell of a lot more traffic on that second post than you would have done had you not posted a contest the day before. I thought that was amazing because I'm almost certain that it would definitely work as well.
Does that work on all platforms, do you think, that algorithm trick?
I don't know. We just don't know enough about the algorithm. I really don't know. But I would, to venture a guess, I would say it's definitely worth a try.
It's so funny how we've all pitted ourselves in this cat and mouse game against algorithms. And us, it's like, you know, we do SEO. So it's always trying to fish down what actually matters for rankings. But when with social too, like we do social for ourselves as like brand building exercises. And it's always like, our goal now is really just to like focus on inputs and velocity because we can't really predict what's going to go viral or what's going to resonate. And it always surprises me what does. It's like this well thought out, you know, LinkedIn post or tweet that I like put time, heart, attention, tears into, it, you know, drops flat. And then like I chip off like a little pithy, you know, quote or something and it totally crushes. So I am at the mercy of the algorithm. I have no idea what contributes.
I don't think that's a bad thing because really at the end of the day, it could be changing all the time. We don't really know. I mean, there are some things which we've proven about the algorithm which do work and which definitely don't work. That example that I gave has not been proven, but I think it's definitely worth a shot. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, it's hit and miss, isn't it?
Well, there's more. So like one thing that's interesting to me, and this isn't a platform of Explore, but I know you wanted to talk about this, but TikTok in particular is known for its algorithm and that you can get on the platform and without like a huge audience, you can probably gain more traction earlier than other platforms. And I think that's why a lot of people love it. Has that shown to be true in your experience largely, or how does that resonate? Coming in as kind of a noob here, so.
Well, noob to noob. I'm not an expert on TikTok yet. Icona Square's account on TikTok is not, it has not taken off yet. We are planning on working on it. However, we have opened up TikTok analytics. So we have had some feedback from our users who are happy with the analytics which we're providing. In terms of early users having a better shot at being recognized by the algorithm, from what I've understood, yeah, that does pay off. But that's all I can really say about TikTok.
Well, I was going to say, like, do you I mean, it's okay if you have no opinion here, but given you've launched this TikTok analytics feature, do you think that more marketers, particularly B2B, like I don't think that's usually like top of mind. Do you think more people should look into TikTok, or what are your thoughts in terms of like the opportunity landscape there?
Yeah, we've spoken about it and spoken about it and spoken about it. And I think that the consensus is that everyone has their place on TikTok. Everyone can fit in. It's all about finding like the tone of voice and like you have to find like your niche, you know, like and being consistent with the type of content that you're offering up. I mean, as I say, I'm not a user of TikTok in the sense that I don't post anything, but I am a consumer and you know where you go for a certain type of content. We have Trevor, actually, who is our customer success director here at Icona Square, and he is a big TikToker and he's amazing. And he found his niche. Like, he does these videos now and he's managed to grow like a huge community. He's doing so well. And just from experience, what I can say is that's what you need to do. You need to think about what kind of content you can produce frequently and consistently and keep doing it. And I think that that goes for individuals as it does for brands.
Yeah. TikTok fascinates me. It kind of scares me too, because I think there's such a opportunity there, but I've heard so many horror stories of people just like getting sucked down the attention rabbit hole. And it's like, as a B2B marketer, this is going to sound crude, but I want to be the drug dealer, not the addict. You know, like to understand the platform, like I would need to understand how it works. And then I would kind of have to be a consumer and I would just be terrified to be spending, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day just like watching video after video. But I don't want that to negate me from actually trying out the platform from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah, you need to like set your phone settings to like shut down the app after a certain amount of time or something. But yeah, you would definitely get stuck. You would go down the rabbit hole. You would have to.
I guess
to.
It's the same with any platform, though. Like, I find myself on Twitter doing the same thing, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just like scrolling through this. Like, what is this giving me? You know, versus actually participating in it.
YouTube is the one for me. I find myself at like 3 a.m. like watching some random documentary about rabbits or something. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you still here?
Same here. What are you personally most excited about in the content space? You know, looking forward into the future a little bit, like what gets you out of bed and makes you stoked about this role?
Me personally is the variety of content that I can produce, be asked to produce, whether it's participating in my own podcast, in other people's podcasts like your own, helping out on webinars, writing ebooks, like this, it's just so vast, you know, and it means that I'm never bored. That is what gets me out of bed in the morning, definitely. What I'm most excited about, I still haven't tried out Clubhouse.
Me neither.
I think I should, because I'm hearing more and more about it.
Isn't Clubhouse dead?
I don't know.
I feel like I heard so much about it, you know, several months ago, and I don't think I've heard as much lately, but I have no idea.
Well, I'm hearing more now in France than I did at the beginning when it was more US. So maybe it's shifted or maybe it's dying.
I thought Twitter Spaces stole their lunch. Are you familiar with Twitter Spaces?
I've heard of it. Yeah, maybe you're right.
They just ripped the future. It's straight up the same thing. Like, you get on like this synchronous call and it's all voice and stuff. So so funny with social media, like how easily, you know, if you've got a feature, like a larger competitor can just kind of like take that and it's part of their platform now.
Yeah. It's like stories when stories first came out and now everyone has stories. It's ridiculous. There's LinkedIn. Oh,
Snapchat. I was so bummed when it was Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. They had stories too. I think Twitter also used to have stories.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's wild. So is there... When you think back to your career in content marketing, is there anything like that you have changed your mind about with regards to content?
Oh, that's a good question. What springs to mind is delegating, actually, because I used to want to do everything myself. And I've now got to the stage where I know that it can often be done better by somebody else. And that's that was a big realization for me, you know, I'm a perfectionist. I mean, a lot of content marketers will say that they're perfectionists. I like to proofread. I like to be hands-on. And I think that I used to use a lot of my time making sure that my own work was perfect and it wouldn't leave me a lot of time for everything else. And now, as I say, we have freelancers. I have Marie who takes care of social media. And it's incredible the amount of time that I now have to do other things. Like the podcast is literally, it's been open for a year. And that is thanks to that time. So, learning to sort of relax and let somebody else take care of the things that I thought that only I could take care of. Yeah.
That's so much more of an emotional thing than a rational thing. I have the same problem recovering from the same problem. I used to now I've got a personal blog where I publish, I'm trying to build some affiliate revenue. So I'm publishing product listicles, which to me, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have touched it. It felt like, some form of cheap content and I wouldn't have outsourced it. Right. Like I always had this particular, control over my own voice. I'm like, people expect this voice, and this style of content. And same thing with social. We get a lot of, value out of Twitter and LinkedIn. And I'm like, I don't have time to do all this myself. So I've gone through this slow unwinding process where it's like, I have to take a trade-off. It's like, do I want to achieve the mission or do I want to protect my ego? Right. And it's been a slow process of letting go. And what I realized is it was all in my head. It's like there's no audience of people who are like scrutinizing like every blog post I write and being like, that's not something Alex would write. You know, it was all something that I had cooked up in this perfectionist stew. So how did that work for you? I mean, this is something that I'm still working through. There's still areas where I just feel like my heart drop when I have to let it go and trust that somebody else can pull it off.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I think that at the beginning I was kind of waiting for the backlash or waiting for the comments and nothing happened. So mm-hmm. the recovery for me was quite easy because I realized, wow, that means that that my theory was right. I'm fine. Everyone's fine.
Yeah, it's all good. And I think for me, I realized like the macro vision of what I'm doing matters, but like the micro things are actually much less important in the grand scheme of things. And everybody's busy and you rarely notice like these little things that in your own head feel like such a big deal, like these little, stylistic things in your writing or how you would design a certain social media graphic or something like that. It's like, it's so unnoticeable to the rest of the world, but so crucial to you. Exactly. And like getting yourself out of that picture is important.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you could compare it to thinking for hours about what you're going to wear on a certain day or for a certain event or something. And then like a couple of days later, does anyone actually remember what you wore? Of course not.
That's a great way to put it. So a kind of related question to the changed your mind about, but this is kind of the contrarian question. What do you believe to be true about content marketing that most people would disagree with you about?
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to think. What do I believe to be true about content marketing that others would disagree about?
Or in the corollary is what common wisdom would you disagree with?
I'm not sure if this would be disagreed with. We used to have a frequency for publishing blog articles, and we're going in the same direction for publishing podcast episodes. A bit like on social media, being the more frequent, the better, as much as possible, and almost quantity over quality, but it was never said. And I would definitely disagree with that. I definitely think that even if the content is rare, as long as it's packed full of value, that is the most important thing. I'm not sure if that's something that others would disagree with. I know that a lot of people in the space are very attached to the frequency, but I would be more attached to the consistency of the quality.
Mm-hmm.
Over the frequency. Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking out loud, but to me, frequency is more a matter of it's more important to you, the creator, than it is to the audience. It's something that, like, if you have trouble holding on to, you know, input standards, if you know, you've got writer's block, or if something like, you know, if you're a perfectionist and you just need to put stuff out there, like, I think frequency is for you. It's like, I'm going to publish twice a week. And that's like a rule you make for yourself, but your audience doesn't really care. Like, they're not just waiting like a drip, you know, and like, when is Alex going to produce his next article? So I think that's one of those things where if it's a tool for you to get out and like do what you want to do, that's fine. And maybe there's a case for social. Like, I know there's some algorithmic things where, you know, if you're publishing all the time, that does raise your salience in the algorithm. But I think in terms of content and blog posts, like, if you think about who you read regularly, it's like, for me, like, wait, but why, right? Like, that guy publishes once every 4 months or something like that. And it's like, sometimes he'll publish 4 posts in a week, and sometimes you'll go a year without hearing about him. But I still read every one of his posts because they're fantastic. Whereas I can't remember, you know, the last time I followed a blog, like, I followed a Netflix TV show. I was just waiting until the next article dropped, you know?
Exactly. And that's, kind of comes back to what we were saying earlier about putting yourself in the shoes of the person that you're targeting. And I believe that I'm probably part of the target audience that I have here as a content marketer for Icon Square. And the same on social media, although you are right that in terms of algorithm, the keeping up the consistency is definitely a good idea, especially for Instagram anyway. But I'm never sitting expecting a newsletter or something in my inbox, like thinking, oh, well, it's Friday and it's 3 p.m. Where's my content? You know
the only time that's not true for me is with podcasts. I'm realizing that now. Like, sometimes I do, like on a Friday, if I know there's this podcast that I really enjoy, I'll like refresh my screen and be like, where is it? That's the only time, because I think that is a little more serialized, like a TV show kind of feel.
Yeah. And that's definitely the direction that we're taking with podcasts as well. But as I say, for blog articles, I think that you read an article when you need it. I mean, most of our traffic at the moment is organic. So I think that in our case, it's a matter of who types the keyword into Google and when. And it doesn't matter exactly when that blog post came out. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why we need to have the content coming in on our blog for SEO and to keep our notoriety in Google. But in terms of a blog post must go out on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I think it's just adding pressure to your like workload. Like, it's making you feel bad if you don't manage it. And actually it's not necessary to stress out about it, I don't think.
Yeah. I think kind of a corollary to this one that I totally agree with you on is, one of my contrarian opinions would be that content calendars for most companies are overrated, at least the way people construct them, as if it's like a, you know, TV show kind of publication cadence. If you're doing SEO in particular, right? Like, I think if you've got 20 articles and they're targeting keywords, why would you wait 20 weeks to publish each of those once per week? You should just publish them right now and like let Google get to work. Now, it's different if it's, you know, maybe podcast, or if it is more of a narrative thought leadership play. But I think most companies who are doing this, they feel like some need to space them out as if somebody's like waiting for that next article. But if it's SEO, just let them drop, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Then put your feet up for a couple of weeks. Why not?
Yeah, go back to the drawing board. Sit and think for a little bit. Not getting in this constant kind of urgency treadmill that I think we put ourselves on.
Yeah. For social media, it's not exactly the same, I suppose. I mean, I definitely would englobe social media in the content. Mm-hmm. And we have a social media calendar, which we offer here at Icon Square, which Marie has just finished creating and sending out.
I think social is different. Yeah, I do. Because I also, like, for me, like, I think in chunks. So, like, what I do is I try to schedule out any particular, you know, thought boy type tweets. It's like things about content or something. And then I'll tweet in real time, like, if I, you know, have something interesting to say, but, like, I'll plan it out, right? I'm not, if I tweeted 30 times in one day and then not for the rest of the month, that'd be pretty weird.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that we were saying about consistency on social media. And then there's all like the special hashtag days and stuff like that. And today is Earth Day. So you definitely want to make sure that that tweet goes out on the right day. But
for sure, for sure. Although now that I'm thinking out loud, like I think there's some people, and I don't know, this is probably not a good thing, but when they tweet like 30 times in a day or post a bunch, you're like, all right, I'm watching a meltdown right now, and I'm very fixated on this. You know, I'm thinking of like old Kanye West stuff, or like Mark Andreessen's been doing it recently, and you're like, what is happening? Creates like a spectacle. Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if that's what they're wanting, but anyway, productivity wise, like you know, transitioning here, like what's the Emily Marsh production function? What how do you manage your time and get so much done?
I'm a fan of Pomodoro timers. Like to set my day up into periods of deep focus and periods of less important tasks, and breaks. Breaks are important. Getting up and moving around. My productivity largely relies on my organization, and I am a very organized person. I'm not afraid to say it. I will wake up in the morning and plan my day, and I very, very rarely alter that planning.
Plan your day as in like chunk out your calendar or pick your to-do list, your tasks, or like what do you mean by plan your day?
I have a long-term to-do list where I know like which I'm constantly adding to, and then I will pick the priorities for the day, and I will not stop until they are done. Although I do, as I say, I'll put into a calendar the exact chunks of what time to what time I'm doing each task, and it works really well for me.
That's awesome. Well, we're coming up on time. I wanted to ask if there's anything that I didn't ask you or that you wanted to talk about that you would want to explore now.
I don't think so. I'm happy that we were able to talk about my podcast because it's my new baby. But
no, podcasting is so fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
You get to have uninterrupted conversations and learn from people. It's the best.
Yeah, no, it's so, so fun. And I'm learning so much all the time. It's really great to be able to talk to people who actually use Icon Square because, as I say, I've been working here for 6 years and I never really got into contact with our actual target, you know? And now here I am and I'm able to have these amazing conversations, and they are real people, you know? They're not just numbers on screens. They're real people and they have all these interesting stories to tell. And I'm really lucky that I get to be the person that they tell them to. So, yeah.
I love that. And I totally resonate with that. Well, thanks for telling me your stories today. And it was super fun. Do you want to just take a moment to tell people where they can go to find you online?
Yep, can do. If you want to find me personally, it's Emily Marsh on LinkedIn. And if you want to check out the Iconosquare blog and podcast, you can go to esm2.iconosquare.com.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you so much. This is super fun.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.